Robinhood Radio presents Do the Right Thing
with Karen Grigsby Bates, Los Angeles-based correspondent for NPR News. Karen also was a news reporter for People magazine, a contributing columnist on the op-ed pages for the Los Angeles Times for 10 years. Karen's work has also appeared in Time, The New York Times, The Washington Post, Essence, and Vogue.
Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right.
It's Karen Grigsby Bates, Do the Right Thing. Hi, Karen.
Hey, Gil.
So, I know I asked you before, but here I am again with my hand out. Let me rephrase. Yes. I know I've asked you and you've given before. So, here I am again with my hand out.
Yes, people, well, you know, there are a lot of things that, a lot of good causes that need money, and a lot of frivolous causes that want money. And a lot of people are asked to do a lot of collecting on behalf of the cause's cause, no matter how deep or how shallow. And a lot of us get asked to contribute to things over and over again. Now, maybe you asked me to buy Girl Scout cookies in February or March, whatever the season for those is. It feels longer and longer now. And maybe I've done that, and then maybe the school gym is trying to build new bleachers, and so you've asked for that, and I've given you some money, and then somebody had a baby at work, and you're asked to contribute to that pool, and somebody else has a kid who's, I don't know, collecting for UNICEF or something. All legitimate causes, but there's only one you and one income and multiple requests for the income that don't even have anything to do with the other things I just mentioned. You still have a mortgage, and maybe you've had a car accident, and so you've had to pay to have your bumper rebuilt, and, you know, you got vaccinations that cost more than you thought they did, and your health plan didn't. So there's all kinds of reasons why people can't or won't or don't want to contribute. And some people just don't believe in making contributions. You know, it can be as simple as that. And I think the hardest thing, besides saying, thanks, but I can't this month, is having somebody follow up with, well, why not? It doesn't have to be very much. You can give me $10. It's like, well, $10 might not be very much to you, but it might be a significant amount to me if I'm skating on a very thin border of my budget.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the person who's doing the asking typically isn't thinking about anything other than needing to fulfill their mandate or quota.
Yeah.
You know, and it's understandable, but it gets tough. And, you know, people, one of the really personal view here, annoying things about the era we live in is that people are just not gracious about accepting no for an answer.
Well, that's true. And so those of us who get asked to do things a lot will have to learn how to toughen up and say, thanks for no thanks. You know, would love to do it. Can't this time around.
Yeah.
Come at me next year. Maybe I'm in better shape. But it's almost as if people, when we say no, feel shame for saying no. It's like the contributions aren't mandatory. They're voluntary. And I think a court decided years ago that your workplace can't pressure everybody into contributing to whatever the board of directors decided was the charity of the year or the chairman's favorite charity or whatever. If you want to do that as individuals, you can, but you don't have to do it in your workplace environment, and you shouldn't be made to feel like we're trying for 100% participation and you're going to ruin our curve and Department B is going to beat us and they'll get the free lunch. Too bad. Period.
Yeah. On the surface, it seems pretty, you know, not benign, pretty simple, but mm-hmm. it immediately just sort of trickles into the way that people I guess the best way I can put it, again, it's repetitive, but people are not gracious if they hear no.
Yeah.
And that's, we were actually talking to someone else about this, you know, about people who have ideological differences and how refreshing that was to watch them carry on as human beings, even though you knew they had total idea. I was thinking about Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, and this was actually speaking of the film RBG, because Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Antonin Scalia were
besties.
Besties, yeah. Absolutely, and couldn't be further apart. They loved the opera, but it couldn't be further apart in the, you know, in the social positions.
Yeah, and would and could argue quite forcefully on behalf of their respective positions when they were handing down decisions, but then could put that away and go have a glass of wine in chambers or go out to dinner together. And you're starting to see that that is just not really done anymore. You know, who does Paul Ryan have dinner with? Who does his who does Charlie Schumer have dinner with? The Senate might be a tinge more collegial than the House. I don't even, that used to be the case. I don't even know if that's the case anymore.
The point is that they quietly sneak around having dinner with each other, and you don't even know it.
Yeah,
because that's the other thing that is not conveyed in all. And this gets back to why it's just because we are living in a time where you're only seeing polarity. I mean, you're being spoon-fed polarity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it's like if I took this position, that must mean this, and I'm either bad or good depending on your view of that position. And then you find somebody else who can do the, you know, the other side of that. Well, that's fantastic, but it doesn't alter the fact that I actually come to work with you every day, and you know, we play softball and our families socialize, and you just don't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it gives one a somewhat skewed idea of yes, no, because it's not
black. It would be kind of nice if actually we did know it, because then, you know, when you're looking at all this fractiousness in other situations, and then you hear, oh, so-and-so took so-and-so and his two, you know, older kids out to dinner when they were in town doing the college tour, then it's like, well, if they can do it, and you know they don't agree about immigration or public housing or whatever it is, then we should be able to be a little more civil to people we don't agree with.
I understand. It just doesn't sell as many medications if you do it that way. That is the sad media truth, but the bottom line life truth is you are along the way going to encounter people that you, starting with your pets and kids, that you have to say no to, and who are going to say no back at you. I'm not including your pets and kids. Our sports guy says it's not all unicorn tails and, you know, puppy dog tails and whatever. It's not.
and glitter. Glitter. True.
And I don't want to say, I don't want to ruin anybody's day here, but, you know, if I ask you for something and you say no, it's like, okay, on to the next.
And it's like, fair enough, you know, but just know that I might come back and ask you next year, because I'm sure, you know, this is a good cause and I'm sure I'm going to be collecting for it then. And next year my answer might be different.
That's right.
I might not bang into a fire hydrant, so I might not need to fix my bumper. My kids' braces may be paid for, you know, stuff like that. And so you figure, okay, your discretionary income, I can afford to do this, and I want to, so I'm going to. The other thing I think is unfair, and I know a lot of people will disagree with me, is that when people's children are doing fundraisers, the parents actually do the fundraising for them. So that you'll come into work and you'll see a sign in the lunchroom saying, my kid is selling, you know, whatever, candy for church, Girl Scout cookies, wrapping paper for the temple, you know, fundraiser to help, blah, blah, blah. And I really would hope that everyone would contribute. Well, it's coercive. and also it's lazy, and also it gives your kid an unfair advantage. What if everybody else doesn't have a parent who works in a workplace, and so they can't strong-arm their colleagues into opening their wallets? If it's truly a project, if it's truly the kid's project, then it's fine for mom to go, or dad, uncle, whoever, to go along behind the kid as he goes and knocks on doors and asks, would you like to contribute to UNICEF? You know, we're really doing it because this is happening in Sub-Saharan Africa right now, and kids my age are starving, and I want to help. That's charming, and people will help. And I understand the parental urge to, like, we don't know who is behind those doors. I'm not letting you go out there by yourself and knock. That's fine. You know, then just stand at the end of the sidewalk and nod and wave at whoever is giving or not giving, and remember to say thank you, and go on about your business. But the business of just, there's 12 people on my cubicle row. I'm going to ask every single one and be really loud about the ones that don't. Don't do that.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
No, but it's, again, it is important on a number of levels to just be able to say what you need to say at the time and have the other person. I mean, again, not in an unfriendly. You should never. How dare you? That's the other thing I just want to throw out. You don't want, if somebody comes to you and says, "Hey, can you throw $5 in the kitty for Isabel's shower?" You can just say, oh, God, I'd love to, but I really can't right now. I am just pasted, instead of saying, how dare you ask me for that? Because I don't do it. Yeah, my bumper, and because that starts a whole other thing where the person really feels like they've gotten, sprayed by a skunk.
Well, and I think if you're asking and you're really trying to get somewhere with the collection business, there are a couple of things to do. If you're working in a sort of communal environment, the way offices tend to be, to say to the people you're asking, I know we have asked for things multiple times this month, first, or the last couple of months. First, Jeff broke his leg, and we wanted to send flowers, or a meal when he got home from the hospital. And so-and-so had a baby, and, there's this contest between the office in the next county about, trying to raise money for blah, 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 blah. But this came up very unexpectedly. Feel free to say no. You may not have heard this, but last night, so-and-so had a fire in their house. And so they have to live in a hotel for a week while all the smoke gets washed out and the blah, blah, blah. Those of us who can help would like to help. And that's it. You do and are thanked, or you don't and are thanked for thinking about it anyway. And maybe they come back 2 days later and say, oh, my God, look what I found in my pocket. It's not a lot, but here you go.
Thank you very much, Karen Grigsby Bates. Do the right thing.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Do the Right Thing with Karen Grigsby Bates, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio.
Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow.
On the web, robinhoodradio.com.
Fly right.